The guys in the balloon factory hold up moments like that as warnings to the unicorn. Be careful, they say, or you'll get into trouble. The thing is, Brad's memo started a chain of events that led to CEO Terry Semel's departure and to big changes at Yahoo. It also led to an even bigger job for Brad. What do you have to lose? Brad didn't leak the memo, but he did have the chutzpah to share a very honest appraisal with his bosses. If Brad had gotten fired, there were dozens of other, yeah, I'm willing to say better, companies that would have given him the opportunity to work with them instead. The worst that would have happened is that he would have ended up with a better job. If the memo had worked, which it did, he would have had a better place to work and have done the right thing, not just for the shareholders, but for his career. After gaining credibility, paying his dues, doing the work, and earning trust, Brad had absolutely nothing to lose by writing that memo. It was hard, no doubt about it, but it was worth it. What are you waiting for? Case study. No kill. Nathan Winograd has no authority. He's not in charge of anything, and he can't make people do what he wants. And yet, shelter by shelter, town by town, Nathan is changing the way millions of dogs and cats are treated, not by fiat or by legislation, but by leading the tribe. Every year, about 5 million healthy dogs and cats are destroyed, well, killed, by shelters in the United States. In some shelters, the number is as high as 90% of all the animals handled. Nathan can't abide this, and many people agree with him. Yet the conventional wisdom and the established tribe made it clear that there's no way to get all those pets adopted, especially the older, uncute pets. Where would they all go? The tribe in power saw no alternative. Starting with one shelter in one city, Winograd's mentor, Richard Avanzino, led them. He showed them that it could be done, that the status quo didn't have to stay the way it was. Avanzino implemented programs that seemed like common sense, but were, at the time, controversial. The San Francisco SPCA started spaying and neutering animals before adoption. They set up a foster home program. Many dogs entered foster care and, of course, never came back. He even filled a van with pets and hit the road, looking for families willing to take a pet. When Avanzino presented his results to other shelters at a conference, some attendees got up and walked out. They represented the status quo, and this tribe wasn't ready to change. The next step is extraordinary. Avanzino took the San Francisco SPCA out of the business of capturing and killing pets. He walked away from a huge city contract, and he encouraged any staff members who didn't share his vision to get out and find a new job instead. He grew a new tribe, found new people with a new attitude, and he led them. Within a few years, his nascent organization had a surplus of millions of dollars. From this base, Avanzino tried to pass a law in San Francisco requiring the city pound to transfer all its healthy animals to the SPCA instead of killing them. What happened next is astonishing but true. Major humane and vegetarian organizations came to the hearings to argue against the law. They said it was impossible. They said that if people thought their pets would be adopted instead of killed, they'd be more likely to abandon them. So how did Avanzino get the law passed? How did his efforts to save tens of thousands of small animals succeed? Simple. His new tribe did it. The public did it. Avanzino found a group, a large group, that wanted to hear his story, that wanted to follow, that wanted to take action. By 1995, San Francisco was a no-kill city. Every healthy pet was adopted, not killed. The story continues with Winograd. After Avanzino left San Francisco, the SPCA started to lose its nerve. Leadership flagged. They canceled their free neutering program and started to compromise their values. Disgusted, Winograd left. He ended up at the Tompkins County SPCA in rural New York State. Basically, he was the dog catcher, with a small budget, one that was in debt, a run-down facility, and a staff who represented the old way of doing things. Winograd followed many of the steps you've read about in this book. He didn't compromise. The very first day on the job, he refused to kill, not euthanize or put down or put to sleep, but kill the animals under his care. He was clear and vivid in talking with the staff, and within months, half of them, the ones who didn't want to join the tribe, had left. Nathan Winograd understood that without followers, there is no leadership. So he went directly to his public, to people who wanted to hear his story, to citizens who wanted to follow. In 1 year, more than 400 media stories were written about his shelter. Donations poured in. Volunteers showed up. 200 volunteers providing 12,000 hours of work. In an industry where 10 or 20% of the animals involved are adopted, Tompkins regularly adopted out more than 85%, with only very sick or aggressive animals not making it. And it wasn't a fluke. Winograd did it again in Charlottesville, Virginia. Then, after establishing a tribe, he moved to Reno, Nevada, and did it one more time. Each time with no real budget and no real power. Just with leadership. When people hear this story, something clicks. First, the outrage that behind our backs, millions of dogs and cats are killed as a matter of course. Second, the pride that one person on a mission could make such a huge difference. And third, the realization that if Nathan Winograd can change a horrible, century-old tradition from the bottom up, we can too. There are tribes out there just waiting to be coalesced and led. All they need is a dedicated leader, eager to do the right thing. I was moved by Nathan's story, moved by the way he pushed himself to make a difference for animals that had no chance to speak up against the status quo, moved by his ability to see the future and make it real, and most of all, moved by his ability to mobilize a tribe and to do it in a way in which every person involved came out ahead. The look of the leader. What does a leader look like? I've met leaders all over the world, on several continents, and in every profession. I've met young leaders and old ones, leaders with big tribes and tiny ones. I can tell you this. Leaders have nothing in common. They don't share gender or income level or geography. There's no gene, no schooling, no parentage, no profession. In other words, leaders aren't born. I'm sure of it. Actually, they do have one thing in common. Every tribe leader I've ever met shares one thing. The decision to lead. What exactly should you do now? You made it to the end of this program, and it's possible you missed the checklists, the detailed how-to lists, and the For Dummies style instruction manual that shows you exactly what to do to find a tribe and lead it. I think that was the point. I can tell you that I'm going to get a lot of flack from most people about what you've just heard. People might say that it's too disorganized or not practical enough, or that I require you to do too much work to actually accomplish something. That's okay. In fact, criticism like that almost always accompanies change. Every tribe is different. Every leader is different. The very nature of leadership is that you're not doing what's been done before. If you were, you'd be following, not leading. All I can hope for is that you'll make a choice. Every leader I've ever met has made the choice, and they've been glad they did. You can choose to lead or not. You can choose to have faith or not. You can choose to contribute to the tribe or not. Are there thousands of reasons why you, of all people, aren't the right one to lead? Why you don't have the resources or the authority or the genes or the momentum to lead? Probably. So what? You still get to make the choice. Once you choose to lead, you'll be under huge pressure to reconsider your choice, to compromise, to dumb it down, or to give up. Of course you will. That's the world's job, to get you to be quiet and follow. The status quo is the status quo for a reason. But once you choose to lead, you'll also discover that it's not so difficult, that the options available to you seem really clear, and that yes, in fact, you can get from here to there. Go. One last thing. May I ask you a favor? If you got anything at all out of this program, if you replayed parts or took notes, I'm hoping you'll do something for me. Give this recording to someone else. Ask them to listen to it. Beg them to make a choice about leadership. We need them. We need you. Spread the word. Thanks.
This has been an Audible Inc. production of Tribes, written and read by Seth Godin. Executive producer, Tanisha Gleason. Supervising producer, George James. Production coordinator, Kat Lambrix. Music composed by Michael Whalen. Copyright 2008 by Seth Godin. Production copyright 2008 by Audible Inc.
Yes, you really and truly have made it to the end. Now I'd like you to join the tribe. Point your internet browser at www.tribes.com, spelled TRIIIBES.com. I couldn't get tribes.com with one I, so I went with three I's because three is the smallest number of I's you need to make a group. See you there. Thanks for listening.